You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today will be another short edition. Mondays and Tuesdays usually are. There are two stories in the news that I'm going to cover, though, rather quickly, because we really don't know all the details of either story. The first is Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel is out. His resignation was announced today. He will be staying on until his successor is appointed and confirmed, and that might be a long time, because starting in January, the Republican Party will control the Senate, and President Obama is going to be hard-pressed to find an acceptable Secretary of Defense. Now, there's a lot of speculation. Was Chuck Hagel pushed, or was this a voluntary resignation? As far as I'm concerned, I'll give you my speculation and commentary on it. The White House, starting at the top with President Obama, is a far left-wing administration. They truly want to withdraw both from Iraq and Afghanistan, pull all the troops out. And if they could have their druthers, that's what they would do. The problem is, if they really were to follow through on this, you would have massive genocides in Iraq and Syria. Now, why do I say that? You have a religious sectarian war going on between the Sunnis and the Shia. For those that are not familiar with the Islamic faith, the majority of people that consider themselves Muslims, believer in Islam, are Sunnis. And most of your Arabs are Sunnis, and that includes Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Qatar. And because of that, you have, the majority of the Sunnis have always hated, hate is probably not even a strong enough word. They don't like the Shia, which is a minority. In terms of percentages, the Sunnis represent roughly 89 to 90%, and that's worldwide, not just in the Arab area, the Middle East. The Shia is about 10 or 11%. You're going to get differences in estimates, but that's what you're looking at. But here's what you need to understand. The majority of the people of Iraq are Shia, and the majority of the Muslims in Iran are Shia. And Iran has really been at war with the United States for over 35 years using proxies. And it's Iran, through its proxies, Hezbollah namely, that is supporting the Syrian regime of Assad. Now, U.S. policy is we'd like to see the fall and overthrow of Assad, who is an Alawite. Think of it as a branch of a Shia, and that's somewhat simplifying it. But you have different, and what's fundamental here is you have a underlying all of this is a religious war, a civil war. And you also have the differences between the Arabs and the Persians or the Iranians. And that's sort of a nutshell of what's going on. But you need to at least understand that basic fact, that the problem in the Middle East right now is you have a religious war in both Syria and Iraq, and it's being led by the Islamic State. And when they go into a town or an area, the first thing they kill are the Shiites. That's why the Shiites flee, as well as the Christians and other religious minority. It's a very much either you're a Sunni Muslim and a supporter of the Islamic State, and if you're not, chances are they're going to kill you. If you're lucky, you'll escape and run. And they're not taking any prisoners. So the question is, how do you deal with that situation? Do you completely withdraw? And I think that's exactly what the Obama administration wants to do, but they can't. Now, why do I say they can't? there's a certain investment that we've made in Iraq. And we did support both the former and current regime that's headed by Shiites. And the problem is that regime has been persecuting Sunnis when they were in power and killing each other. But this is a long historical divide. The difference was when Saddam Hussein was in power, he was a Sunni, but he kept the lid on this religious civil war. That doesn't mean he didn't go after his enemies. He certainly did. He went after the Marsh Arabs in southern Iraq, including the Shia, and he also went after the Kurds in northern Iraq. So you need to understand first what's happening in the Middle East, and the reason why I'm going over this is I think that is why Chuck Hagel resigned. The president's strategy, quite frankly, doesn't make sense. Either you're all out of the area. In other words, there are no troops, no advisors. The only thing President Obama would do is have enough military force to protect diplomatic force or diplomatic personnel in both Baghdad as well as our consulate in Kurdistan, Erbil. But other than that, that's sort of where he wants to draw the line. Here's the problem. The military, the generals, the Joint Chiefs of Staff are telling him that that's not a viable strategy. That the only way you're going to defeat, and I mean defeat, not arrest, defeat the Islamic State is you're going to have to put tens of thousands of troops in. Upwards, I would say, between 35,000 and 55,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. And they're going to have a combat role, and you're going to have to take them on in the ground. That is not what President Obama wants to do. And you got to understand, Secretary of Defense Hagel was in the Army. He was a sergeant in the Army in Vietnam, became a senator, and now he's in the process of resigning from that position because I think he has told people, primarily in the Senate, what the Joint Chiefs are telling him, and that word got around. And it got back to Obama, and at that point, you had fundamental differences. And to a certain extent, what I'm saying is Chuck Hagel was supporting the military. And I think he should, rightly. If someone asked me, well, what should we do about Iraq and Syria? And I would say, totally stay out of it. It's not our fight. They want to kill each other, and they are going to kill each other. And I don't want to see the United States send any more of our sons and daughters into that area, period. We've invested a lot of time and money, and the people of that country view us as occupiers. Initially, we were liberators, but now we are considered and would be considered occupiers. In other words, all the success that we had with the surge was thrown away by President Obama when he withdrew, in essence, all of our troops from Iraq. Because we had the Sunnis on our side against al-Qaeda. Remember, the Islamic State used to be called al-Qaeda in Iraq, and they were defeated. And most of them fled to Syria, the few that were still alive. Now, what happened is they gained strength in Syria and then came back into Iraq. Initially, it wasn't perceived as a great threat. It is a great threat. That's one of the things that Chuck Hagel said that was probably not appreciated by the White House. He admitted that the Islamic State is a great threat. I agree it's a great threat, but who is going to deal with that threat is the issue. And as far as I'm concerned, the Shias and the Sunnis are going to have to work this out, and in the process, a lot of them are going to get killed. And until the Shias stand up, and I'm talking the military, and go after the Islamic State, it's going to continue the way it is. Yes, we can support certain groups in Iraq, but that doesn't mean putting our military back in at all. If you want to use the Central Intelligence Agency and have covert operations, I have no problem with that. In other words, arm the Kurds and train the Kurds. But the actual fighting needs to be done and has to be done by the people on the ground, and those are the Sunni Arabs that are supporting the Islamic State. A lot of them are. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Many of them are just in fear of them because it is al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has come back, and it's alive and well as some former military from the Ba'athist Party, the party of Saddam Hussein. And remember, that's a leftist socialist. That's the ideology of that party, even though it had a dictator. And the dictator was Sunni. So Chuck Hagel has, I think, been pushed. They're trying to be nice about it and say it was a mutual agreement. And I would say if you really fundamentally disagree with the president's policy, and I think he does, although he won't say it in public, then you should resign. You see, what President Obama needs is a Secretary of Defense that could be a Secretary of Defense during a war. Now, he doesn't want a war. That's the problem. So it's going to be very interesting who he's going to appoint and whether that's going to work out and whether that person can be confirmed. But the strategy that we currently have in the Middle East, in particular in Iraq and Syria, is a failure. It's a failure because it's not the president doesn't want, as he always says, and I hate the phrase, by the way, boots on the ground. He doesn't want U.S. military forces, and I'm talking divisions here, in Iraq. But that's what it's going to take, and that's what the generals were telling them. You can't win a war by just air alone, and this has been a rather timid air war, by the way. This is not an all-out bombing day and night of ISIS. If it were, I think the Islamic State could be significantly reduced in terms of its threat, but there's no way to win the war unless you take the battle to the Islamic State on the ground. And that's where you had the fundamental difference between the president and, I believe, the Secretary of Defense. Now, he was a good soldier in the sense that he shared his views with the president in private, didn't make them known. I think his mistake he made was to talk a little bit out of school to some of the senators, some of his buddies in the Senate, such as John McCain, and what he said got back to Obama. And that's probably why he was pushed out. Obama doesn't like to be criticized, especially in public. Even if it's not done in a public forum, he doesn't like people talking out of school. He doesn't like leaks. That's why he's gone after leakers, probably the most vicious way, trying to stop leaks. Now, I understand why presidents want to stop leaks, but Washington is a town of leakers, and most of it is done with the official blessing. It's when it's not done with the blessing of the administration in power that you can get into trouble, especially if it becomes known who's doing the leaking and what they're saying. And I think that's what happened. I think also that the secretary was persuaded by the generals surrounding him and giving him advice that the current strategy simply wasn't workable. And President Obama is going to have to face that, because at some time during the next year or two, the Islamic State is going to launch a major push into Baghdad and the surrounding area, mainly by bombings, terrorist attacks, some gains in territory. And it remains to be seen whether the Iraqi army, dominated by the Shia, is going to be up to the job of pushing the Islamic State out of the areas that it now controls. Without the United States presence there, without in particular, the Air Force support, the aerial bombings and strafings that are going on, the Iraqi army has its tasks cut out for it. Even though they outnumber the Sunnis, and that's something to keep in mind. As I recall, the population in terms of Sunni versus Shia, the Shia is about 65% and the Sunnis about 30%, and they have other minorities. So in terms of sheer numbers, the Shia should be winning. But in terms of the audacity, the boldness, and really the viciousness, the violence of the Islamic State, they have their enemies on the run. And now I think the Iraqi army, as well as the people in power in Iraq, know the Islamic State is not taking prisoners. They're killing their prisoners. So that's going to put a backbone in the forces fighting the Islamic State, because they know if they surrender, they're going to be killed. They're going to be killed. And then the question is, what is the United States going to do? Like I said, I think we should get out permanently out of Iraq and Syria and then just sit back and see what happens. And I think you're going to see a bloodbath. And some people would say, well, that's irresponsible, that's reprehensible. Excuse me, these people have been fighting each other for hundreds of years. They hate each other. They have long memories. And it's families, it's tribes, and it's fundamentally also religions. And that's the way they think, and weakness is jumped upon. And the Islamic State is trying to push the United States to get back. Al-Qaeda, namely the Islamic State, wants the United States to come back. They truly do. Why they want to kill? They want to first kill U.S. soldiers, but more importantly, that will attract even more people to their cause. Because a lot of people in the Middle East, especially the Arabs and the Sunnis, think the United States is betraying them in terms of siding with Iran. And today was supposedly going to be the end of our negotiations. I heard we're going to continue doing this. I think what you're going to ultimately find out, you're going to wake up one morning, like I did, finding out today that Secretary Chuck Hagel was resigning, but you're going to wake up one morning on the news, you're going to learn that the Israeli Air Force has attacked Iran and blown up many of its nuclear facilities. I think that is more and more probable. I'm amazed that they haven't done it already, because I have no faith in our own president or secretary of state. I really think they capitulated to the Iranians, and you have a strong sentiment both in the Republican and Democratic parties to reinstitute sanctions, and that should be done right now before the holidays. Now, it's not going to happen. It's going to be January. The Israelis are threatened by a nuclear Iran, as are the Sunnis. And that's probably the underlining cause why the Sunnis, especially the Saudis, feel betrayed by the United States. Why are we cozying up to Iran, who's been really an implacable enemy of the American people and our armed forces? And they do it through proxies, mainly Hezbollah. Remember, it was the Marine barracks in the 80s that was blown up, and it was strongly suspected all along that it was Iran behind it. But a terrorist blew up and killed several hundred Marines when President Reagan was there. Now, what did President Reagan do? He pulled out of Lebanon. You see, you have to make up your mind. Are you going to go to war with the country? And if you are, it should be total war. It should be war where your objective is total victory, defeat of the enemy, and truly defeat the enemy. It's either that or don't do it. And that's why I'm adamant of always declaring war, which the Constitution sets forth. Even though there have been several hundred instances after World War II where we've gotten involved in countries, some with congressional authorization, some without, and inevitably it leads to the deaths of many Americans and the expenditures of a lot of money, and then we ultimately pull out, and the situation is at best a little bit better than before we went in. And sometimes it's a lot worse. So Chuck Hagel will no longer be Secretary of Defense once his replacement is announced and confirmed. I think that could be at least another 3 or 4 months, unless the Obama administration has someone in mind that would get the support of both Republicans and Democrats. But that's going to be January, folks. There are not many. Remember, Congress is recessed or will be recessed to go for the Thanksgiving holidays. And then they come back, and they have at most 2 weeks, about 10 days, working days, to finish their business. So you're not, even if the Obama administration had someone specifically in mind, and I think this conversation between Obama and Hagel has, the reports are indicating, this has gone back several weeks. This is not, why it might be a surprise to you, it's not really a total surprise in the White House, even though some people are trying to make it as a surprise. I think it was a surprise to the people that were not in the close. Here's the problem, and I think Chuck Hagel is just one example of it. I think you could say most of the cabinet is also an example. The president has a close-knit network of people that share his far-left socialist welfare state ideology. And believe me, they are extreme leftists. They're the core of his supporters in the White House. The problem is he seldom meets with his cabinet. And unless there's a problem with the department, he more or less lets the cabinet secretary run the department. Now, where you can get in trouble is where you have something that you have to get engaged. In other words, where you have the Islamic State, and it was doing this for 10, 11 months, making significant gains in terms of territory it controlled, as well as the oil they were making money on that provided them the funds, and also the weapons that they captured. Remember, most of these weapons were U.S. supplied weapons that we left there, and always thinking that the Iraqi army would use them. The Iraqi army fled in northern and central Iraq. And who got all these arms? The Islamic State. And now what are we doing? Periodically, we're bombing and strafing them. We're mainly firing missiles and blowing up vehicles. Most of the vehicles are, not all, but a large percentage are vehicles that we gave the Iraqi army. And yeah, we do have, there is some good news. I think the Kurds could take them on, but the problem is they're not well equipped to do so. And the more fundamental problem is, no, and here's where it's a no-win situation. Whoever we side with, the other side will be against us. In other words, if we sided with the Iraqi regime, which is the current situation, we are taking sides against the Sunnis, including our allies, namely Turkey, Saudi Arabia. And you have that problem. In other words, we really need Sunnis fighting the Islamic State. Well, good luck. Good luck. If anything, they're flocking to the Islamic State. And remember, that is Al-Qaeda, because it was used to be called Al-Qaeda in Iraq. So Chuck Hagel, I think, is looking forward to his leaving. Now, you need to remember that when he was first nominated and confirmed, he faced a confirmation fight in the Senate, because a lot of people just didn't think he was up to the job, including me. But he made more or less a commitment that this was a four-year proposition. I don't think he really wanted to leave. I think he wanted to serve out 4 years. But the problem is, when you're in a war situation, plans change. And it did change. And if you fundamentally disagree with the strategy, and I disagree with the strategy, it's really half measures. And that's being diplomatic about it. It's a failed strategy. And ultimately, that's going to prove out. Because either one or two things have to happen. Either President Obama turns tail and fully pulls out, or we need to be fully engaged. He's going to resist that and fight that every day of his remaining days in the White House. Because he, together with Chuck Hagel, were against the involvement in Iraq of the George Bush administration. And that's one of the reasons Hagel got this position. He was perceived by many to be a what I would call a peacetime Secretary of Defense. Well, when you're the United States, there's not many periods that you could honestly call peacetime appropriate for peacetime Secretary of Defense, because we're always faced with threats, as we are in Syria and Iraq, where there's really no good options, or very few good options. And where you have a president that starts the discussion that troops on the ground are off the table, that limits your options to very few and not very good options. So at some point, the president's going to have to make up his mind. Now, I think he's already made up his mind. The question is, will he change it? He's going to have to make a change. Either he's going to have to go all in other words, a significant increase in military forces and involvement in Iraq and Syria, and that involves sending at least one or two divisions, not brigades, divisions. We're talking upwards of at least 35,000 to 55,000, where those forces would be combat forces that its primary mission was to seek out and destroy all the military forces of the Islamic State. You see, once you do that, you're committing yourself to first be on the side of the Shiites in Iraq, and some would say being on the side of Iran, and then you run the high risk that as a result of you going back in, thousands of young Iraqis, Sunnis, will flock to the Islamic State. And this would be really a 3 to 5 year process of destroying the Islamic State. It's not going to happen overnight. It is not going to happen overnight. It's not going to be another Iraq war that the major participants are destroyed in a couple of weeks. Why do I say that? Should the United States become engaged in Iraq again? By engaged, I mean we have divisions of Marines and Army in Iraq in a combat role fighting the Islamic State. What's going to happen to the Islamic State? What are they going to do? They're going to immediately switch from what some would call a conventional situation to a guerrilla war. And it will be a civil war, and it will be a war where terror is used. They will go underground. They will go back to the tactics that they were using in Iraq before we left. But now their numbers are a lot larger, probably over 50,000 and growing. And now they have the weapons, they have the money, and they have their supporters both in Iraq and Syria as well as outside Iraq and Syria. And that's another part of the problem. You have Saudis as well as Kuwaitis and Qataris sending money, private citizens, to the Islamic State. And Turkey is on the fence. It doesn't want to really get involved with them. Because remember, many of the people in arms that are going to the Islamic State cross over from Turkey. That has been a corridor for resupply of the Islamic State. So there are no simple answers. I think it's to the best that Chuck Hagel did resign. Whether or not we'll really know the true story, we'll see. There'll be leaks. That's one of the problems of reporting this story today. A lot of people are keeping their head down, but there'll be leaks. Reporters have their sources, and they can get deep background comments as to what really led to this. So I think the story will come out eventually, and maybe quicker than we think. Because unlike some of the reporters saying this was not a policy difference, I think it was fundamentally a policy, or more correctly, a strategy difference, where the clique of Obama supporters were supporting one strategy, namely to disengage and very limited U.S. involvement in Iraq. And you had the military and the Department of Defense, as well as the Secretary of Defense, saying that simply is not viable. And remember, the White House clique, most of them have never been in the military. Most of them are from academia, and with few exceptions, don't have experience in this area. They've never been on the ground. They loathe the military. And that's what's going on. We have a president and most of his advisors that were never in the military. The only one he had was the Secretary of Defense. And I think the Joint Chief of Staff, both its head, have been pushing back. Privately, they're going to take orders, but you're going to get them telling the president what his options are and what their recommendations are. And then the president can either elect to follow them or ignore them. And I think what's happened so far, they're ignoring it. The problem is the Islamic State, they don't care what Obama thinks. So they're going to go after the Iraqi government, the Iraqi military, as well as Assad. And that's part of the problem. The United States government would like the Islamic State to take out Assad. But then you have, that just compounds the problem. Then you'll have Al-Qaeda. And remember, here's the thing. Al-Qaeda's not on the run. It's reemerged. You see, that's just one of the many, many lies of Barack Obama. We have Al-Qaeda on the run. No, they don't. See, what they did is they narrowly defined that. Al-Qaeda in Iraq was a major, major subgroup of Al-Qaeda. And for a while, we did have them on the run as a result of the surge working and getting the support of the Sunnis in Iraq to, in essence, we bought them, we put them on our payroll, and they began to trust us and informed on who the Al-Qaeda operatives were. And as a result, we could attack them. You need intelligence to tell you who are the bad guys and where they're at. And we had that for a while. All that has been thrown away. Now the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, controls much of the area where the Sunnis are at. And what they're doing is periodically attacking Baghdad with bombs, terrorist bombs, suicide bombs. And they're going to go into Basra, which is southern Iraq, where the oil is. And they will attempt to consolidate their gains. And the only way you're going to stop them is military force. That means combat forces, infantry, fighting it out, duking it out, house by house, street by street, in the major cities and towns in Iraq. And President Obama doesn't want any part of that. He wants to get out of Afghanistan. He wants to remain outside of Iraq. And that is the policy of the president. And he's entitled to have his policy, but is increasingly being criticized because he's also definitely, I think, wasting a lot of time negotiating with Iran. They're just delaying it. So I'm not going to be surprised if you wake up in the next year, maybe two, and find out that the Israeli Defense Forces have taken out that major threat to the region. And it's a major threat to the Sunni Arabs that Iran have a nuclear weapon, because what the Iranian government is about, they want to be a regional power in that area. And because of the religious differences, they're Shia. The Arabs and the Sunnis feel directly threatened and want it stopped. So the United States has been being perceived, unfortunately, as a fair weather friend, that you can't rely on it. I wouldn't trust this president, and I don't trust this president. He has a fundamental flaw in his character. He's a liar, an habitual liar, and I wouldn't take anything he says at face value. And that's not a basis for relying on the United States and its military. So the Arab world, the Sunni world, are looking at us and seeing what we're going to be doing, as well as the American people are looking at the Obama administration. It's gone from bad to worse because of a rather terrible foreign policy and a disaster of a foreign policy, as well as economic policies. Now, with that, the other story that I was waiting for is the fact that it has been leaked out through the family of Michael Brown that, and that was the 18-year-old that was killed by a police officer in Ferguson, Missouri. His family, through the attorney, has leaked out. There has been a verdict reached by the grand jury in Ferguson, Missouri. The problem is we don't know yet what that verdict is. Now, this is just my opinion. I have absolutely no inside information. I think it's going to be a no bill. And what I mean by that, there's not enough evidence to go forward with a trial. Remember, all the grand jury is doing is deciding whether or not there's enough evidence to support a prosecution. It doesn't mean the police officer was guilty. And where there's not enough evidence, that's called a no bill. In other words, they don't indict the police officer. And that's exactly what I think is going to happen. And probably when I get off the air in a few minutes, I'll find out. I think they were saving it for the Thanksgiving weekend and a cold spell. And I think they're going to release it probably about 7 o'clock. Is my guess. It's now about 6:21. My suspicion is in evening when it's nightfall, dark out, it's cold out there, they're going to make an announcement. And my suspicion is it'll be a no bill. I don't know. I think it could go either way. I could see why they might do this. Because many people don't understand, just because they indict him doesn't mean the police officer is guilty. That's just a first step. That means there's a trial. And I think if there were a trial, the police officer would be found not guilty. And then a lot more evidence will be released as part of the trial. And here's what I think the grand jury has to keep in mind. I wouldn't want to be a prosecutor in this case, assuming the police officer were indicted. Because I think this was a justified homicide by the police officer that was in fear of his life. He was attacked by this teenager, not the other way around. And the teenager had just come from shoplifting a local store, pushing the manager owner around, was told to get out of the middle of the street, attacked an officer, tried to get his gun. Shots were fired, at least two, in the police car, and the evidence supports that. And then this teenager runs away, turns around, and then comes back. And at that point, and that was the teenager's mistake, the police officer felt threatened. And I would feel threatened. Remember, this so-called kid, this teenager, listen, he's over 6 feet. He's intimidating. He's big. And if he's running at me, and remember, he just finished trying to get my gun and attack me and hit me in the face, the police officer is entitled to shoot him. And they're trained to. They are trained to do that. That's why I think it's going to be a no bill, because that information is presented to the grand jury. What the training is of the police officer when anybody goes after their gun and when the police officer is in fear of his life. Because they will tell you in the training, someone running at you can quickly close that distance and you don't know what weapons he has. and he could get his hands on your weapon. So you're trained to draw your weapon and use it. That is the training. And that's why I say if the evidence supports that scenario, and I believe it does, there'll probably be a no bill. With that, I need to sign off. This was a little bit longer than I expected, but I got through what I wanted to cover, and I'll have probably more information tomorrow on both of these stories when we have more information, in particular the situation in Ferguson, Missouri, but also probably more information as to why exactly Chuck Hagel submitted a resignation and it was accepted by the President of the United States, Barack Obama. Now, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.